This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I've never felt like this before. It's like you just get me. I feel like my true self with you. Does that sound crazy? And it doesn't hurt that you're gorgeous. Okay, that's it. I'm taking you home with me. I mean, you can't find shoes this good just anywhere. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at your DSW store or DSW.com.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Daryl Dickey is an absolute legend of the game, one of my former OCs under Fuente and then into Mike Norvell. Coach at Texas A&M, offensive coordinator, was a head coach at North Texas for some time in the early 2000s. We bring him on now at Coach Dickey 1 is where you can find him on X. Coach, how's it going?
Gabe, it's going great, but you're kind of making me feel old. I remember when you played, and now Connor said that he was getting ready to put me on with the big man. So I'm glad you're doing well. I keep up with you on social media, and I think you're doing a great job, and you got a great story to follow. Memphis football has done remarkable.
Yes, absolutely. What are you doing these days? Last time I saw you surface with Georgia as an offensive analyst?
Yeah, I was at Georgia for 1 year. When I left A&M, I went there and I absolutely loved it. Kirby Smart is the real deal. Great coach, great program. But my wife and daughter stayed here in College Station. My wife works at the George Bush Library. And my daughter, Meredith, who y'all probably really remember,
yep.
She started her own business and is actually doing really, really well. She got her degree from A&M in sports management, and just kind of that field didn't fire her up a whole lot when she actually started doing the work. And she did these things called charcuterie boards.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
And just fell into it during the COVID year on accident. She liked them herself, and she was making them and eating them, and a friend of my wife's was over, and the three of them were eating it, and the lady looked at her and said, hey, if you'll make one of these for me this weekend, I'm having a brunch for some ladies, about 12 to 15. If you'll make me a bigger board,
right,
I will pay you. And Meredith said, nah, you don't have to pay me. I'll do it. Well, the lady refused to take it without paying her. And then I think two ladies from that reception got her phone number and said, will you do me one? Will you do me one? And kind of cha-ching started.
Yeah.
They saw the possibility. And so I was at Georgia and my family was here. And even though I really enjoyed what I was doing, I kind of, after 1 year of doing that, I thought, you know, maybe I need to go back and spend a little more time with my family. I drug them all over the country for all these years. And Meredith ended up opening a store, and I'm financially invested in that, as well as just, I'm kind of like the CFO, the chief financial officer, and then the head janitor. Those are my two hats I wear at her store. So I moved back here. I've been out of football 1 year, but to be honest, I'm having a blast. I haven't ruled out, you know, maybe getting back into coaching and or getting back into sports in some capacity. I see Fuente is going to do radio at TCU. You know, I've talked to some people about some various things, but right now I'm staying pretty busy helping my daughter Meredith.
Yeah, your career, you brought up dragging them all over the country. How many moves did you go through throughout your coaching career?
Well,
did you keep count? Did you lose count?
No, we did. You know, and when I say this, some of the moves were – you have to move occasionally to advance. So when I start saying this, you know, it's like my mother-in-law asked Tori one day, said, can this guy keep a job or what's going on? And, you know, I wasn't fired from all of them, although I got fired from a few. But I go back and, you know, I first started at Memphis. That was my first full-time gig. I was actually at Texas A&M in 1985 as a graduate assistant. First full-time job was at Memphis. I was there with a guy named Charlie Bailey for 4 years, and we or 3 years with Charlie and a guy named Chuck Stobart. And Coach Bailey did a great job. We had had 2 1-10 seasons. Not we, but Memphis had under a coach that they got rid of, and Coach Bailey came in, and we weren't in a league back then, and we played 5 to 6 SEC teams every year, and we got up to where we were having winning seasons. He was one of the hottest coaches in the country, and then one thing led to another, and he wasn't there. So I went from there to Mississippi State for a year, LSU for 3, UTEP for 3, SMU for 1. Then I was a head coach at North Texas for 9. I went out to Utah State for 2, New Mexico for 2, Texas State for 1, and then back to Memphis for 6 years. And it was the same deal. We came in, and the coach before us had kind of struggled. They'd gone 1-10, 1-10. And, you know, I came in with Coach Fuente, and we were part of the group that kind of helped it get going. And then when he went to Virginia Tech, I had moved my daughter, and she was midway through her junior year. And I said, I'm not going to move her during this part of her high school career. So I probably did what a lot of people would consider was career suicide. I told Coach Fuente I wasn't going, and I didn't have a job. And I talked to Mike Norvell, and originally he wasn't going to keep anybody, but through the process, he ended up keeping me, and just one of the best things that ever happened to me. And then the situation at here at A&M. So I think I've moved 9 times.
Jeez, that's a lot. That's a coaching profession for you. Now,
I told Tori, I said, you know, I'll show you the world. And she said, well, I didn't know we were going to live in all these places. So, but it's been fun.
Yep, no doubt. Now, Memphis, from when I was there, you were there 2012 to 2017 for your second stop. I know I'm putting you on the spot, but like when you think back on that time, like what hops out to you memories wise? Like what was your favorite memory from that second stop when we got this thing going?
Okay, I'll hit both 2 things. One, the one thing about Memphis, before this little run they've been on, Memphis had always been a place that would get going and then go back down.
Right.
Get going and then go back down. They'd never had a whole lot of really sustained success. Like Tommy West was probably the only thing close to sustained success. And then before him, you go back to Coach Murphy.
Right.
You know, but Memphis has had sustained success since Justin Fuente's 3rd year until today. Mm-hmm. That's pretty damn good. 3 different head coaches, and they've been in bowl games every year. And before Coach Fuente left, the last coach to ever leave Memphis on his own accord was a guy named Fred Pancoast. You've probably never heard of him, have you, Gabe?
I've heard the name.
Okay, well, you've done your homework because he was there a long time before you were born. But so anyway, I think the fact that when we came in, Coach Fuente put in a work-style mentality because that's how he was. He was a grinder. He was a hard worker. And we worked them so hard, and you were part of it that, you know, we were probably either going to lose the whole team and they were going to turn on us, or we were going to, you know, kind of turn the corner and get it going. And I think, you know, probably some of my best memories, the very first bowl game we went to, the Miami Beach Bowl, we won the game and we won the fight.
Absolutely.
We had a really good weekend down there, but they started the fight. And so, you know, picked the wrong guys to pick a fight with. But
People don't pick a fight with a senior who has nothing to lose. It was Martin Effetti, the center for BYU, pushed Martin Effetti. Don't push him. Don't do that. Also, he's worth mentioning, 6'4", 275, and he was an NFL player.
Right. Well, and I'd been out at Utah State and had kind of been around BYU, and no disrespect, but they kind of were looking.
You guys
down their
made
nose
us
at
them. Hate them before that game, too. I remember the cut up that Coach Fuente put up on the board of their dirty plays.
Yeah, they kind of were chirping at us. We hadn't been to a bowl game in a while. We weren't really as highly thought of as a football program then as Memphis is now. And I just remember a couple of times I heard them make some comments at some of the functions we went to together. And, you know, one thing I will always say about Memphis players, that when they get ready to play, they can play with anybody. When I was there with Coach Bailey, we beat Alabama and they were like fifth in the nation. And the next week we turned around and we lost to Southwest Louisiana. So, you know, it was one of those, if we could get ready to play, we didn't lack for any confidence. But no, that was a fun season. You know, and then Mike Norvell coming in, you know, cause he walked into a tough situation. Coach Fuente had gotten the program going. We had a pretty good football team coming back the next season. And he came in, and I felt like the football players that were on Fuente's team that came back and played for Norvell really bought in to Coach Norvell. And, you know, the first year we didn't start off really good. We had a lot more turnovers than usual because we changed offensive styles. And I think we went 8-5 or something like that.
Right.
But then the next year, man, we took off, and our only loss, we only lost to Central Florida in the regular season and Central Florida in the championship games, and that was a heck of a football team. And then, you know, Brian Silverfield has kept it going. So I think probably one of the funnest games that I've been a part of, and you'll remember this, Coach Norvell's first year, we played Houston the last game of the regular season.
Yep.
And it was a shootout. And Houston had our number. We couldn't beat them. We almost beat them the year before and kind of blew like a 20-point lead or something in the fourth quarter and then missed the field goal on the last play of the game to send it into overtime. But they had our number, and they had a really good team.
Right.
And they came to Memphis, and we beat them 48-45, I think was the score. 45-42, something like that. It was a shootout.
It was Anthony on that slant across the middle for the game with a touchdown. And I think that was Herman's last game before he went to Texas.
Exactly. You know, the story is that the night before the game, ESPN leaked out that Tom Herman was talking to the University of Texas. They had targeted him. Well, their team dinner, that comes across the TV, and we talked to some of their coaches the next day and said, our players are really mad that came out, and, you know, they felt betrayed, and so they're either going to play lights out or they're not going to play at all. But to be honest, it was a great game.
Yes.
I mean, both teams played unbelievable, and, you know, the best thing I think Coach Norvell did when he got there was go get Riley Ferguson.
Yep. 100%.
Because that dude was a killer now. I mean, and he was a showtime guy, you know, because Paxton announced he was coming out after the bowl game that year. And you know, Coach Norvell was like, you know, I was still talking to him. He hadn't quite hired me yet. But I said, you know, you might want to think about going and getting a JUCO guy. And I told him about Riley, and he had already been talking to Riley from Arizona State. And what a phenomenal deal that was to bring him in.
So you brought up the Houston Tom Herman thing. You had to deal with that with the Birmingham Bowl in 2015. We started off 8-0. Navy beat us. It was rough. And then down the stretch, I swear to this day, I think we lost to Houston twice when they had that big comeback. And then we played Temple the next week. We were just down in the dumps because we felt like we had lost everything. But you had to deal with that. Like, I still get questions about the Birmingham Bowl to this day. How tough is it when coach leaves, you have to take over, you have to try to rally the troops? Obviously, it feels like a very, very tough situation.
Yeah, and the thing is, I felt like I had a good relationship with the players.
Right.
We were playing an Auburn team that had some guys hurt during the season, and we're getting them back for the bowl game. And then for us, we, you know, Paxton pretty much knew he wasn't coming back. And, you know, I don't know if you remember, but Ricky Hunter got hurt.
Yep.
During
that was a fight, and somebody got pushed.
Yeah, and during our practices, and that wasn't that strange. We had fights all the time,
yeah.
But they were good fights. I mean, but you know, so
for sure,
it was ten to ten at the half, and they just kind of made some plays in the second half and pulled away. I wish we'd have been a little bit more at full force, but you know, Coach Narvell had already been named the head coach, so it was kind of a different situation. A lot of times, the interim coach, they use it as a, well, let's test and see what happens in the game and maybe go with him or not. But they hired Coach Norvell, and then Coach Norvell wanted me to coach the bowl game, which I was fine with. But he was out of practice every day. So it's a little bit – my situation was it's a little bit like – it was a little bit like being kind of a substitute teacher
right.
When they know that, you know, this guy's running the program right now, but he's not going to be the permanent head coach. So – I think we had a lot of fun leading up to it, and you know, we played well, but we didn't play good enough to finish it up.
Yeah. Now, I'm sure you've seen the news, the Big 12 and the offer Memphis threw out there, and the Big 12 saying they're not interested. When you look at this athletic department and the football program, the strides they've made, do you think they're a power? Do you think the University of Memphis is a power conference program?
Well, I do. I don't know why that they didn't get into the Big 12 and maybe even have been asked to be in other conferences along the way. You know, I hear probably the same things you do, the knocks against Memphis, that I don't really know if that's legitimate. You know, I do think there's a whole lot of people making decisions on college football that don't know a whole lot about football or sports, and I can say that now that I don't coach
right.
anymore, because
yeah.
I'm not in danger of getting fired, but I'm kind of like, you know, some things don't seem to make sense from a geographic standpoint. Memphis is in a great location. They're in a great city. The travel in and out of Memphis is easy. I mean, when you go play Arkansas State, which I did at North Texas as a head coach, and when you go play Ole Miss, most every team that comes and plays stays in Memphis.
Yep.
You know, and so I think the Memphis athletic department and the programs, the football, the basketball, the baseball, the other sports that are there, they've done everything they need to do to show they can compete at that level. The financial investment, I think, everybody says this Tillman Fertitta's who helped Houston, but I mean, there was no bigger advocate for Memphis athletics than Fred Smith.
Yep.
And, you know, so I really am I'm stumped, by why it hasn't happened, you know, but I've always been the type that, you know what, if something doesn't go your way, you can't sit around and whine about it, make the best of the situation you're in, which I think Memphis has done. And it'll happen one day, or maybe this conference will just continue to grow and develop and get better, and might be the best situation. I was a little worried, just being very honest, about if Memphis would have gotten an invitation to the Pac-12, and
right.
I don't know if that materialized or didn't, but I would have been like, oh man, they don't want to do that. That was just my feeling, and it's a big name, but the travel is crazy. And I was semi in that situation at North Texas. When I first got there, we were kind of in what they call the old Big West Conference, which everybody we played was out on the West Coast. And it wasn't as good a deal as people thought it might be. And I was getting the same worries for Memphis when they were talking to the Pac-12. I thought the Big 12 would have been a great situation.
Right.
But, you know, there's some, when you start stacking the teams up, there's some, the American still has quality football programs, basketball. I mean, whether it's on par with the Big 12, I can't sit here and say one way or the other. But I do think Memphis just needs to keep doing what they're doing and, you know, winning games, being relevant. I mean, going down to Florida State last year and winning, that's a big
awesome.
Win. You know, it's awesome.
So, and shout out to Mike for scheduling it.
Yeah, but I think probably he thought when he was doing it, he was doing Memphis a favor for you know, letting him be the head coach and
right.
so on and so forth. And then, yeah, like he picked a bad time to not have a very good season, because I watched the entire game, and it was not a fluke. It was a pretty dominating performance by the Tigers.
Yep. All right. Now, I don't mean to open up old wounds, but I need to ask you about the Texas A&M time. You were with Jimbo Fisher as his offensive coordinator. And Jimbo, like, the amount of money he made, it was unbelievable at that time. A&M was, you know, really taking a shot with him to try to get to a national championship, and it didn't work out. It just didn't work out. There's no other way to put it. Why didn't it work out, in your opinion, from where you were?
Well, you know, there's a lot of factors that go in. A lot of people think you just can throw out a bunch of money and buy a national championship. A lot of people have tried, and it hasn't happened. You know, A&M has only had one national championship in 1939, I think. They've won a few conference championships, but, you know, Coach Fisher came in, and to be honest, I thought we were heading in a nice trajectory. And I was here for 5 of his 6 years. Our fifth year, going into our fifth year, you know, I felt like, and Jimbo's a great football coach, great offensive mind. He got criticized at Florida State and here for not having an up-to-date offense, but I disagree. Mm-hmm. He's got a really good offense that when he's got the players in place, it's as strong as there is. Probably his Florida State national championship team right. might have been one of the best teams in all of, you know, college football history. So, but when we kind of, I think after our third or fourth year, we kind of started getting more to a drop back passing game, as opposed to we had a quarterback here, kid named Kellen Mond, that was yep. a great athlete, and we incorporated some quarterback runs, some RPOs, some option game, and we utilized his ability. And when he left, we kind of got away from that and got back to more of what Coach Fisher, you know, which, hey, who's to say it was right or wrong, but it didn't work out. The next year we finished 8-4, and we had some quarterback injuries that killed us. Our starting quarterback broke his leg the second series of the second game of the season against Colorado, and our backup came in and played really good. And then had a few games that were really poor, and we went 8-4. Mm-hmm. We had one game short because something happened. We didn't play one of the games that was still some hangover from the COVID deal in 2021. And so then the next year, my last year, we kind of really were moving towards the drop back game. We weren't as stout pass protection wise as we had been in the past. And we didn't have a good year. Our starting quarterback once again
yep.
got we benched him after the second game. He played really poorly, and we got up by Appalachian State, which got people those upsets happen, but they get people stirring. Then we cruised along, and we lost to Arkansas, which is a team we hadn't been losing to, and we went with another quarterback. Then down the stretch, we found a really good quarterback, and so, but we didn't win enough games.
Yep.
We went 5-7. I got fired, and you know they were going to continue to evolve offensively, and it just didn't work out the next year either. I think they just decided that things weren't going here the way they thought they should for as much money as they were putting into the program, so. They decided to make a change, and but you know Jimbo Fisher's a hell of a coach. He was good to
yep.
me, you know, right up until the day he fired me.
But yeah, right.
That's part of the business, though. I know that. I knew that going in, and I had a great time here. We had some huge wins. You know, we beat Alabama when they were number one in the nation. Our first year here, we played LSU, and they were pretty well thought of program, and we played 7 overtimes, and we
yep,
beat them 74-72. That's my one little claim to fame now that my career is over. I'm the only coach in college football. This record will never be broken. I'm the only coach in college football history that has played in 2 7 overtime games and won both of them.
There we go.
And LSU A&M was 74-72, and North Texas versus Florida International, went seven overtimes, and we won 28-25, the two worst-looking offenses you've ever seen.
It's a hell of a trivia question.
Two really bad kickers.
Yeah, for sure. Well, yeah, I hear you. But that's a trivia question we need to throw out there.
Yeah, the second one, the LSU one, is what changed the overtime rules.
Do you like the new overtime rules, by the way, dueling two-point conversions?
Not at all.
Yeah, I hate it, too. I can't stand it.
I think you should do what they used to do. And, you know, how many seven overtime games are you going to get? Not many.
Right.
But I think that's the best way to find out, you know, who's the better team. But, you know, I don't like the new one. I don't like the just going for two. But, you know, everybody's always changing a rule when something happens. I got one more trivia question. Somebody, I think, posted on your thing the other day about Calvin Austin starting for the Pittsburgh Steelers, and they were saying, you know, and he didn't even get a scholarship till his third year at Memphis. There's another guy exactly like that you know.
Anthony?
Anthony was a walk-on.
Yes.
He had a couple of other offers, but Fuente, he came to camp and ran a 4.6.
Yep.
And Coach Fuente just couldn't get past that. And Holman Wiggins and I both were in there going, Coach, we got to take this guy. And Anthony wanted to be at Memphis. And you know how he was. He said, just give me a chance. And so I went to his mom and him and sat down and Coach Wiggins. And we said, look, you come here, you make your mark, you'll be on scholarship soon. And his mother only had one question. She said, I just want to make sure he's going to get his chance.
Yep.
And I said, I promise you.
He earned his chance. I remember first year on scout team, him cooking the starting defense, just absolutely
no doubt
killing them.
Well, and his mom said, well, Coach Dickey, so you'll know, he better get that chance, because if he doesn't, I'm coming after you. And I said, okay.
Don't want to cross her.
So it was a good deal. So that was some of the fun times, is seeing some guys come in that maybe weren't highly recruited. Tony Pollard had no other scholarship offer. Comes in and he's just lighting it up. And, you know, just to see those guys come in that maybe were, I don't know, you had some offers, if I remember, Gabe.
I had very few. I had Ball State, Memphis, and FBS, and then a bunch of FCS.
Okay, well, that was the typical guy we were getting.
Yep.
You know, but those guys were fun to coach. They were hungry. They wanted to win. You know, when we got there with Fuente, those guys were willing to do anything to win football games. And so we put in a very tough off-season program, which I think they still do today, a very demanding, you know, weight room program. We hired good strength coaches.
Yep.
I thought that, you know, when y'all were there, and I think they still do. But I mean, just things kind of fell into place. But the most important thing wasn't what we did. It's what the players we brought in. They all kind of came together and bought in and became a team. And that's what I'm probably most proud of, is just the fact that the group of kids that came there, that they bought in and just worked through the tough times, and we got to where we could play with anybody.
Yep.
And, you know, UCLA, what a great game that was. A week after, they came from 30 points down to beat Texas A&M. I don't know if you know that, but we played UCLA in the Liberty Bowl, and the week before they beat Texas A&M out in UCLA, like 45 to something, whatever, 42, and we smoked them. I mean, it was a great game. Then we beat Ole Miss with Paxton. So there were some great wins when we were there, but they're continuing to have them. So that's what I'm glad is kind of the foundation that got laid is continuing and being built on.
Yep, I take a lot of pride in it. It's awesome to see. It really is. But,
Coach
Dickey, I appreciate it. Great stuff. I want to do this again soon.
You bet. Anytime, tell your lovely wife hello. Congratulations.
Absolutely.
On the first one, and first of many, hopefully, or first of a few, and go Tigers, go.
Yes, sir. He is Coach Daryl Dickey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Escape the heat to True North convenience stores and get any size True Oasis fountain drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi fountain drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
You know, there are a lot of passions. Some days it's sports, other days it's cooking, or music, or just diving into a great documentary. The thing is, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. Amazon Prime isn't just about fast delivery. Though getting stuff the same day is pretty great. But it turns out it's so much more. Prime Video, Amazon Music, the whole range of services. It's like a hub for all kinds of curiosity. Prime helps people stay connected to what matters and keeps the journey of exploration going, whether it's watching something inspiring, listening to a new artist, or getting gear delivered fast to chase a new hobby. Prime makes it easier to dive in. So yeah, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. From streaming to shopping, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to get more out of whatever sparks interest. Amazon.com/Prime.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart, for a healthier you. Smile Generation. Trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you, committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with Confidence Unleashed.